Okay, we have two challenging parshios in front of us, in a sense. First off, we have Parsha Shmini, which has quite a lot in it, but we have in front of us this year Shlishi, and Shlishi of Shmini is a very difficult aliyah. It's a tragic aliyah, very, very difficult concept, and a very difficult psukim to read. It starts off rejoicing and very quickly turns tragic. The death of Nadav and Avihu, which happens very suddenly in the midst of rejoicing, the Aliyah begins, V'teitzeish, Milifnei Hashem, V'teichel on Mizbech, Esa'ola, V'esachalavim, V'yar kolam, V'yaronim, V'yipu al pneihem. So here the fire comes out and it eats the Ola and the Chalavim, and everyone's watching. And then what happens? Vayichu v'nei Aaron, Nadav v'Avihu, Ish machtaso, vayitnu v'hein, Eish v'yasimu alea kitores, v'yakrivu lifnei Hashem, Eish zara, asher lo tzivo osam. So here, the sons of Aaron, Nadav and Avihu, each one takes from... They take their machta, they take their fire, and they put on this fire that they weren't commanded. And there is clearly already the stage is being set for something to go wrong. And the Medrash and the Taurus Kohanim reads into all the words here misdeeds and a tone of arrogance, as Rav Shlomo Shnaufel Hirsch reads all of the lessons here. The idea that they emphasize the lineage, that they are the Bnei Aaron, but they didn't take Eitzah from Moshe, they didn't share the covenant with Aaron, each machta soul, their own machta, everything seems to put the focus on them personally. And Rav Hirsch suggests that throughout you will find an emphasis on their individuality, when the whole point of a Kohen is that a Kohen acts as a part of the Tzibur and not as individuals. And that's already giving you a little bit of a sense of what went wrong. But we don't really know specifically what went wrong. We have, if anything, too many theories. It's evocative of what we find with Moshe Rabbeinu in his denial of entry into the land, and there again we have many different theories what exactly it was. We don't know which one is the dominant theory. Here too we have as many as 11 different theories. We won't even try to go through them all as to why it is that they died. The Torah comes closest by telling us that it was an Esh Zara, that it was a strange fire that they offered. And the Gemara has a couple of the theories, and a few places different Gemaras has different theories. So, for example, the Gemara Maseches Erevin, Dasamach Gimel Mar Aleph, the Gemara tells us Al Shahira Halacha Bifnei Rabo, that they paskined in front of their Rebbe. And what was the topic? That even though there is fire already coming Min HaShamayim, they still have to bring their own fire. They still have to bring the fire Min HaHedjet. And the Torah Tamima understands that the Psak was actually correct, but nonetheless, what they did wrong was they were more halacha of their rabbo. So it's not that they paskin incorrectly, it's the fact that they paskined at all. So din in Yeridaya and Reish Membeis, more halacha of their rabbo. And others understand that this is actually wrong, because the language here is Eish Zara. So the Maral writes is Eish Zara because of the Mora Halacha Bifnei Rabo. Rav Nosson Gishtetner in the Laharis Nosson over here, he writes that the Psak creates the reality, that because the Psak was Bifnei Rabo, and so therefore it was Aser, so therefore the unjust Torah creates the Psul in the Din, and therefore it was an Eish Zara. And we find elsewhere in Shas other issues that are highlighted. The Gemara in Sanhedrin and Afton Beis Mar Aleph tells us that they would say, "A Masa Yamusu Shnei Zakenim Halalu," Vani va'ata, they say to each other, Nani gesador, when are they going to die? And you and I will take over. Rashi writes over there that you see that they were looking for Sarar and Rabbanus. They were looking for leadership. It's also a very striking idea. There's a long drasha about this in the Lev Avram. We were just reading recently Tshuvas from the Lev Avram. That same Lev Avram who wrote the Tshuva that we recently discussed about the con man who took Sukkah and what you do about that, and about Matanas Lev Yonim, whether you should know who is giving and the like. So that same Lev Avram, after he passed away, relatively recently, they published from his writings on the Torah, so they published the whole tshuva, a whole drasha that he wrote about this, that he thought that this idea, they said, when is a Canaan going to die and we'll take over, that they had a certain attitude about Kiruv, that they thought that the way you get people closer to mitzvos is that you have to be okay with the little averus that they do, and that way, at least you'll bring them closer to the big things. So you create an atmosphere where it looks like you're endorsing the smaller averus, and that's the way you're makari of them. And so he reads that into various phrases that you see here, and the whole idea of bringing an Eish Zara into the Mizbech, into the Mikdash, the things that really were not fitting, they acted as if they were giving their endorsement to, and they brought it in, and that's essentially how they thought this would be the new wave, and that this is what they were trying to essentially create a new fashion of Kiruv, and that they were saying the old guard was getting in their way, and ultimately Chazal, the Gemara continues to, when they would express this, that the response was, well, we'll see, Mikover is me, who's going to end up marrying who, and that ultimately their whole approach was shown to be one that fundamentally compromised the Mikdash, and that's what the result tragically displayed. The general mahalach that many understand from the whole Eish Zara idea is that it's a reflection of trying to get spirituality in a way that is not in the fashion that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was dictating. So they had their own notion of spirituality, and it wasn't the mitzvah of the Torah. It was them dictating their own terms. And in general, it's a theme that many, many express based on notions of the Torah as a whole, but this is one of the major contexts of that, and the Chasam Sofer and many others have drushes about this, but Rav Hirsch and others, but they point out specifically that if the idea is you're looking to get closer to God, so then you need to do that on His terms. You need to do that looking at His commandments and trying to understand what they are and to work with them, not trying to shoehorn God into your understanding. So the notion of seeking spirituality, but seeking through your own understanding rather than vice versa, was literally the fatal mistake here. The Midrashim also emphasize. Question about that?
Well, just a point. It's a similar point. I know Rav, I don't remember who exactly he bases on, but I know Rav Penner has shared a similar idea vis-a-vis Avodah Zarah.
Mm-hmm.
That if, you know, say Avodah Zarah, it's hard for me to relate to this, you know, infinite and invisible God, so I'll have this thing that I'll have with me that'll help me, you know.
Negel Azav.
Yeah. Or, you know, my little Baal figure or whatever, and it'll help me relate to a God or an aspect of God better, but it's ultimately misguided. So the same...
Misguided.
What?
Misguided.
Yes.
Right. Yeah.
So in a similar or vain, correct?
Right, and vain. Sorry. We're on a roll here. But the whole idea of essentially, you know, whose terms are you doing it on? So the idea of crafting God in your image rather than the other way around. So many see that to be the overall message here. And the Midrashim also emphasize that they didn't get married. And the Ksav Sofer has a whole drasha where he suggests that there's also a related theme here, that it also goes together with what was mentioned before about their attitude of Masa Yamusu, the Kenim Halalu, that they saw that Moshe Rabbeinu was very prominent in his communal leadership, but that it seemed like he didn't do so well in his family life. That was what seemed to be the case. While Aaron was a little more successful with his family life, and wasn't as prominent as Moshe was. So maybe there was somewhat of a trade-off. So they anticipated the leadership, and therefore they thought, okay, so they shouldn't get married. So it was also this notion of trying to control the terms that was being reflected here. The Ksav Sofer has a drasha along those lines. So the pasuk continues here with another very powerful and haunting pasuk. It says, Vayomer Moshe El Aaron. So what does Moshe say to his bereaved brother at this very tragic moment? It says, Hu Asher Diber Hashem. This is what God said. And the Gemara says in Zvachim, Moshe Beis, I knew this would happen. Now, this is what I expected. So Torah Tumah says, what's he saying here? So the way he understands it to mean, he says that Moshe was saying that I knew there would be a need to show that even though the Mizbech is Mechaper, it's Mechaper of the Shogeg, but it doesn't mean that you can just do anything amazing. It's not the Mechaper in that absolute sense, that Chachili, you can just decide to do whatever you want. You still have to follow the rules. But he goes on to say, B'krovoy HaKadesh, which is also a very haunting and mysterious phrase. It's generally understood to mean that a Kadosh Baruch Hu emphasizes his exaltation to those who are closest to him, which can be taken in so many ways. It could be an act of nichum from Moshe to Aaron, saying that God is exacting in particular with those who are the holiest. And therefore, the fact that Nadav and Avihu, who are otherwise understood to be tzaddikim, and they clearly are being judged here on a very high standard. So that idea that if they're paying such a high price for something which must have been very subtle, so that can only be taken to mean that they must have been similar to him, essentially. He's not saying that, but we can say that in retrospect, knowing that this is essentially comparable to the price that Moshe pays in not being able to go into the land for a, like we compared before, a mistake that we have to work hard to figure out what it was and have multitudes of theories trying to figure out what it was. So on some level, there's a comparison to be drawn, just like Moshe was held to a very, very high standard because of his tzidkus. Perhaps there's something like that to be said about Nadav and Avihu as well. So essentially, this is an act of nichum to Aaron to tell him that it's reflective of something very praiseworthy of them. But b'krovoy HaKadesh, so God has said that he is sanctified through those closest to them. Rabbi Lamb has in one of his drashas that there is a comparison being drawn here, the way the phrases are b'krovoy HaKadesh, v'alpnei kol ha'am ekabed, that those are meant to be compared to each other, that the people who are closest are sanctified, and the rest of the nation, they react in a way that's b'chavidik, it's a lower level. And that it maybe is actually referring to Aaron, not to Nadav and Avihu, that it has to do with how they respond to tragedy, and that Aaron is on a madrega, that he is going to take this tremendous loss, and he is going to respond in a super dignified way that will sanctify God's name to a tremendous degree. And for the rest of the nation, they respond in a way that's b'chavadik, it's not on the same level. So, apnei kol ama chaved, so God is honored by how the masses respond to such things, but the people who are closest to him, Aaron, that is really the Kiddush Hashem. Aaron's response to the Kiddush Hashem. And then it goes on to say, so then if that's the way you interpret it, it's a straight flow, Vayidom Aaron. So whether this is Moshe comforting Aaron, or whether this is a description of how Aaron is responding, any of the number of ways of understanding what these preceding words mean. So it flows into the idea that Vayidom Aaron, so Aaron was quiet. And again, whether that means he was just speechless in response to what happened, or he was makabalit b'shtika, he was makabalit without complaining, or he was makabalit calmly. So the Torah Tumimah writes here that this is related to a Gemara in Masechas Brachos, which the first parak of Brachos, which lists off various acts, how they reflect the schar one gets in the context of various mitzvahs. The Gemara talks about the context of a Beis Avel, in the context of a Beis Medrash, in the context of going to a wedding. There's certain mitzvah kinds of environments, how you measure the reward one gets for them. So the Gemara says that in the Beis Avel, where it calls it a Beit Tamia, it's the language the Gemara uses there, Agra, the Beit Tamia, the reward one gets for being in a Beis Avel, is measured by the shtika, is measured by the silence. So Torah Tumimah says that's what is being conveyed here, that you see Aaron is silent. So that's a reflection of what the Gemara says, that the schar that the Avel gets is reflected in his shtika, in his ability to accept things with this calmness and with this lack of complaint. So it's a question if that's what it means, and there's a lot to discuss about what that Gemara is talking about, especially because you get the impression that the Gemara is talking about the Menachemim, because the mitzvah is on the ones who come to the Beis Avel. So why should it be defined by the schar of the Avelim, or by the stature, by the status of the Avelim, the stance of the Avelim? But then on the other hand, if you say that the Avelim should be assessed by their silence, that's hard to understand, because the mitzvah of Nichum Avelim really requires them to speak in general, to be Menachem the Avelim. So why should it be assessed by silence? And in fact, it's particularly ironic because Rashi in the Masechta Sanhedrin, in explaining that term, Beitamia, that's used here for a Beis Avel, so Rashi says, why is it called the Beitamia? Shematim enoso bedvarim, that you use words to give him some kind of sense of meaning. So the whole phrase is meant to reference speech. And to say that the schar is based on shtika is hard to understand. So some of the mafreshim suggest that it's a reference to a Gemara in Moed Katan, which has a halacha, which is brought in Shulchan Aruch, and it's an underappreciated halacha. It's a halacha that people aren't so aware of, and it's unfortunate because it's a real halacha, it's brought in Shulchan Aruch, and it's a din that people should be more aware of. There's a din that, in the context of Avelis, that ein hamenachemim rishoyim lidaber ad sheyiftach ha'avel tchila. That people at a Beis Avel are not supposed to speak until the Avel speaks first. So there are those who suggest that that din, that's what the Gemara is talking about. That you're not supposed to speak until the Avel speaks first. So when the Gemara says that the Agra de Beitamia is shtika, it's a reference to that din. So that's a little hard to understand on the surface, because all of those statements in that Gemara over there, the schar of the given mitzvah is calibrated based on a certain attribute. So you're going to tell me that the schar for Nicham Avelim is all calibrated based on some obscure halacha and Hilchas Nicham Avelim that most people don't even know about? So I thought the pshat was that it's actually more central than it seems, that this halacha is actually very significant, and it's again chaval people don't know about it. It's actually very significant to the whole mahus of the Nichum Avelim. That what is the message of this halacha of not talking until the Avel speaks first? What's the purpose of this day? I think the message is that Nichum Avelim has to be a very serious process that is not one size fits all. And it has to be calibrated to the individual you're dealing with. And every Avil needs to be looked at as an individual who's going through a unique experience. And there's no standard speech that you can walk into a Shiva house with that's going to be appropriate for every Avil. And if you come into a Shiva home and you have something that you always say that you can just launch right into, and you think that's going to be appropriate no matter who you're sitting with, it's not going to be a successful visit. So what the Gemara means when it says "Ein ha menachem and mershayim ledaber ad sheyiftach ha'avel tchila," they mean that you have to listen first. You have to first hear where the avel is at. You have to gauge their mindset in order to have a successful nicham avelim. So you shouldn't be talking until they give you some indication. Doesn't mean it has to be literally words. It might just be a sigh or a look, or actual silence even. But there has to be some sense of where this avel is at before you start talking. Otherwise, it's not going to be an effective nicham avelim. So if you consider that meaning, then it's actually very understandable what the Gemara is saying when it says, Agra debeitani yishtika, that the schar, meaning the success of this Shiva visit, is going to be measured by the shtika before you start the nichum process. How carefully do you listen? Do you assess the state of this avel before you begin sharing what it is you want to say? So in any event, we find this idea of shtika could mean a number of things here, Vayidom Aaron, and it's certainly subject to interpretation, but I have to say, I've always found it completely baffling, the idea that in Yom HaZikaron in Eretz Yisrael, those who are opposed to stopping for the siren, and they say that it's Chukas HaGayim somehow, that we don't have an idea in Judaism of silence as an expression of mourning. I don't know where that comes from. And it seems to be very clear that there is some basis, like we were talking about yesterday, that, you know, when we talked about taxes and about all you need is at least a svara. There's certainly a svara of silence in the face of mourning, whether it's the only way that you can argue, but there certainly are legitimate interpretations of silence as an expression of the proper reaction. So, in any event, just to mention one other aspect here, so Rashi has a comment about this silence of Aaron, that Aaron got a schar, Rashi over here in Chumash. Rashi writes, Kibel schar al shtikaso, umas schar kibel shnes yachid imu hadibor, shenemra lo levado parshish shesu yayin. That a few psukim will read about the din of the Kohen not being drunk. So that is associated individually now with Aaron. So that's the schar for his silence. So what does that have to do with anything? So the Avnei Nezer had a comment, it's quoted in some other svarim to talk about the Avnei Nezer. And this is particularly meaningful now the week after Purim, when we spoke a little bit about drinking and its effects, that the association here is that part of the praise of our own silence is that he represented here, as he put it, specifically it quotes the Yiddish, the way the Avnei Nezer said it, the spitz von Yishuv Hadas. He was the ultimate in Yishuv Hadas. That here's somebody who must have been so shocked and stunned and bereft and mentally tortured, the loss suddenly of two such outstanding sons, and to be able to be so composed and so dignified. So this is really the ultimate display of Yishuv Hadas. So to be able to be associated with this halacha of teaching the dangers of intoxication and the inappropriateness of drunkenness in the Mikdash, and that he is the symbol of that, he is the one associated with that, so that's appropriate, because the one who is able to maintain his dignity at this moment and his composure at this moment, he is the symbol of that. And again, coming off of that on Purim, or right off of Purim, is something to think about. The Sefer that quotes the Avnei Nezer, so we can't fully understand this, but he makes a note there. But he also had a comment in the context of Purim, and that's the idea of how the Avnezer understood the Holad L'Yad. Idea was that he understood that you weren't supposed to specifically get drunk, but that the Avnezer somehow understood that Gemara, that the drinking was completely separate from any intoxication. That one was able to get the mila of drinking in a way that was disassociated from any kind of intoxication. So I don't know what that means practically, but it just is highlighting this connection that Aaron was able to maintain his clarity of thought. And so therefore, that's what Rashi is telling us, that that's the schar that he gets, that he's associated with his din, that makes that point as well. So, okay, so let's just skip ahead a little bit. So let's skip to Pasuk Vav. So the Pasuk tells us, V'yomer Moshe al Aaron al-Azar li-Samar bonav. So Moshe instructs the Mishpacha HaMisabelis, the mourning family here, the father and the brothers, the surviving brothers, Roshechem al-Tifro, uvivdechem lo-Sifromu, lo-Samusu, v'al kol ha'eda yikzof, so he basically tells them that as far as Hilchos Avelis, you should not observe Hilchos Avelis here in the Mikdash. So we are able to derive from here certain halachos of Avelis from what they don't do. And the Gemara in Moed Katan and Daf Yutes Amud Beis says that this is the mocker for Avelis Shloshim. And it's the Gezeirah Shava from Nazir. Happens to be the Rambam in Hilchos Avelis, in Hilchos Abel, in Parag Vav, Halacha Aleph, the Rambam quotes the Pasuk in Kiseitse by Eshe Sifas Tower. The Pasuk says, Ovachsa Savia V'yasima Yerach Yamim. So it's interesting, this seems to contradict the Gemara. So the Torah Tumima writes, it doesn't really matter because it's not really a din d'oraisa either way. So an asmachta, so it's really a din d'rabbanan shloshim. So it's an asmachta either way. So the Rambam picked a pasuk that was more related to what we actually do. That pasuk is more in a context of avelis that we relate to. So the Rambam picked that as the remez in order to make it more understandable. But this reference to letting your hair grow wild and also to not tearing your clothes. So it's also a question, gives you the impression that Kriya, telling you not to do Kriya, so if, apparently if it were not for this, they should do Kriya. So it sounds like Kriya is Daraisa here. So that's a whole discussion. Is that really the case? So the Ramban writes over here, or the Ramban writes in the Gemara in Moed Katan, in the Chof Dalet, which talks about this, because it sounds like otherwise they would have to do Kriya or Yerchayef Misa. So the Ramban comments on that there in his Sefer Torah Sa'adam, that's all in Asmachta, because Kriya is Drabanan. Now the Ravid disagrees. The Ravid writes that Kriya is Daraisa. There's a lot to say about the whole nature of Kriya, whether Kriya is Daraisa Drabanan, what is it meant to convey? Is it meant to be an expression itself of Avelis, or an expression of the idea that things are out of order? Is it about the Maisa HaKriya, or is it about walking around in the torn clothes? It's about being in a state of disorder. So there's a lot to discuss about what exactly the whole message of the Kriya is. Important sugya. Mipesach oha moed lo seitzo pentamusu, k'shem mishchas Hashem aleichem v'yasu kitvar Moshe, v'dabra Hashem al Aaron lemor, yayin v'shecher al teisht ato v'necha, yitach b'vachem al moed lo samusu chukas om v'daroseichem. So here's this instruction of wine. The Gemara here emphasizes, increases, and after you give them a base, we're talking specifically not to drink in a way that is intoxicating, meaning that to drink in a way that it's not diluted or with long breaks in between. And specifically, the Gemara continues, Lahorus is B'nai Yisrael, Es Kalachukia, Mashiach Diber, Hashem Aleichem, B'ad Moshe. And specifically in the context of teaching, as we find also that when one is paskening Alach L'maisa, that there is this extra concern as well, that one should not be intoxicated. And like we said before, so this is taught in this context, Rashi says, as a special schar to Aram in reward for his composure. So, just to say a few words, this is also the week of Parsha Zachar. Parsha Zachar is one of the... Parsha Par. Yes, thank you. Thank you for reminding me. I just had called it Zachar, so you should remind me. But also, there is a possible connection between Parsha Zachar and Parsha Par. So Parsha Zachar, we usually say, is the only time there is a Kriyas HaTorah Min HaTorah. But Parshas Para may also be. There is a day in the Rishonim that includes Parshas Para in the list. It's actually mentioned also in Shulchan Aruch. But that's mysterious, because when it comes to Zachar, so you may recall, you may remember, that we discussed that you have to explain all the details, why it should be that Parshas Zachar in its contemporary form, why all the details are necessary as a kiyum of the clear daraisa of Zachar Sasher Salach HaMalik. That is a clear daraisa, that why it requires all the details of the Sefer Torah and Shul and the Minyan on Shabbos at that time, etc., etc. But we understand that there's a clear daraisa there. But Parshas Para, we don't even get that far. So what is the source that would tell us that there is a Din Min HaTorah of Parshas Para? So that's a question. It comes up in a few Rishon in the beginning of the second parak of Brachos. And it's hard to explain, so much so that there are a few among the Achronim who thought it was a typo. That maybe you thought I was making a mistake here by confusing Zachar with Para, but again, I'm just trying to teach you something by doing that, that there are some who thought that the reference to Parshas Para in the Rishonim was really a typo, that it was pei-pei, and that it was actually supposed to say Parshas Purim. It was another reference to Parshas Zachar, and that somebody else made a mistake and interpreted it as Parshas Para. However, that's probably unlikely for a number of reasons. So it seems like it is a real view that Parshas Para is also Min HaTorah. So the question is, where do you get this from? So the Aruch HaShulchan thought that maybe it's because you have a notion that it's called the Chukas Olam, I believe, that the Parsha, that the concept of Paraduma has to be knowing all the time. And I don't know how many of you have seen the Paraduma recently. So just like we have the idea that Meshalma Parim Svasenu, that we can fulfill the idea of, usually you apply that to the Parim of the Karbanos, that we fulfill the idea by learning about it, so maybe we should lane it in order to be Mekayim it. So maybe at least once a year we have the public Kriyas HaTorah to fulfill that. And there are a couple of other suggestions as well, but one particularly interesting suggestion is that maybe we can make a shidduch here. That there's another question you could ask. That there is a pasuk in Parshas Ekev that tells us about another mitzvah of Zechira, not Amalek, but something else. The Torah tells us, Zachar al Tishkach, Es Asher Hitzavta, Es Hashem Lekecha Bamidbar. That we should remember how we angered God in the desert, which most assume is a reference to the Egel Azav. It's possible it's talking about something else. Looking back at Kamenetsky, I assume it's talking about something else. But the most common interpretation is the reference to the Egel Azav. So it sounds like that there's a mitzvah to remember the Egel. So indeed, it's commonly counted as one of the six Zechiros to remember the Egel Azav. So where is our Shabbos Parshas Egel? We don't have that. So the Magen Avraham writes that nowadays we have Kriyas HaTorah all year. We go through the whole cycle of the Chumash. So since this involves an Aveira of Klal Yisrael, it's a bizayon for us to have a special focus on remembering the Egel Azav. So we rely on Parshas Kisisa. So we don't have a special reading for it. But there are some who suggest that maybe we can make a shidduch here. So the Tshuva Sarugis Abosem and the Malbim, his a small sefer on halacha called the Arzus Tachaim, they suggest then maybe we can make a shidduch. We have here a mitzvah that doesn't have a kiyum. And we mentioned before, we have apparently a chiyuv that doesn't have a source. So let's make a shidduch that maybe the din of remembering the ego hazav is fulfilled through the practice of laning the parsha of paraduma. Paraduma is the way to fulfill the mitzvah of the remembering of the ego hazav in the spirit of what Rashi writes in Parshas Chukas, that the paraduma is the kapara for the ego, in the spirit of Yavo Haim, let the mother come and clean up the mess that the child made. The child is the ego. The mess is cleaned up by the mother. So, if that's the case, we could understand that maybe the point is that what's the reason to remember the Egel Hazav in the first place? So some understand that the Egel Hazav represents the possibility of sin even when we are at the highest spiritual point. We just received the Torah. And we are here able to receive this, we're able to sin anyway. So therefore, we have to have zehiras. We have to be careful and be aware. So therefore, the Egel Hazav reminds us of that. So if that's the case, we have to be very careful. So perhaps the paraduma is actually a good fill-in for that. Because the paraduma, as we know, represents the paradox, right? The big mystery of how could it be both potentially metame tahorim and metare tameim? How could it confer both tuma and tara? So perhaps, certainly the paradigmatic mystery, but it represents the fact that there's no inherently safe situation. Safety can only come from your own self-control. You do the best you can to put yourself in the best context, but ultimately it comes from your own efforts. And that's what Paraduma and Egel Hazav both represent. Represents it in a more positive way. And therefore, we choose that to be the more positive reminder of the message of the Egel Hazav. And perhaps that could explain how that is the fulfillment. In the more positive sense, you could also say, and I think this is the more general way it's taken, that Egel Hazav represents the Avera, but we don't want to remember it because of the Avera, we want to remember it because of the potential for tshuva. So we focus on the Kapara rather than focusing on the Avera. So the Hanhagya has developed to fulfill this mitzvah of remembering the Egel Hazav through its Kapara, so that we should understand that that's indeed what we're looking for. So with that, we should take the theme of these parshiyos together, that there is sometimes tremendous tragedy and downfall, and how we react and what we take from it makes all the difference. And Rahmanul Islam, we shouldn't know from sin, we shouldn't know from tragedy, we shouldn't know from catastrophe, but when Khalila such things happen, we should be able to respond in a way that is uplifting and inspiring, and that paves the way for a better tomorrow. We should all have a wonderful uplifting Shabbos, and I look forward to seeing you on Sunday when, as I understand, our plan is to review the themes of Sukkah.